Just going to take a quick break from the show, everybody, to tell you a little bit more about one of my favorite things in the world, Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love, or there's new stuff to discover all the time in Audible. Incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business. They got it all here in Audible, and you can have it all too. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, including Small Town Murder, Crime and Sports, and Your Stupid Opinions, with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to habituate every type of thriller listener. And you can keep your heart rate up month after month with this pulse-pounding collection you can't hear anywhere else. The true crime stuff they have is amazing. Right now, what I'm listening to is The Family by Ed Sanders, and it is a full, complete retrospective on the Manson family, kind of all of what they were doing to set their weird stuff up. It is amazing and incredibly detailed. Great stuff, and there's so much more on there. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including bestsellers, new releases, latest stuff. You got it. It's all there. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500. That's audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500.
Now back to the show.
This episode is brought to you by Philo.
Oh, philo.tv.
That's right. There's nothing better than unwinding, watching a little TV. But it's a real hassle if with, you know, cable trying to flick through. Cut the cord. Get rid of that. You don't need any of that. Philo has all that you could need here. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month.
What?
Can't beat it. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they have an unlimited DVR for 1 year, so you can save all your favorite shows.
Wow.
Watch them when you want to watch them. Yeah. That's fantastic. Never miss a minute of shows like Death by Fame, Married to Evil, or The Prison Confessions of Gypsy Rose Blanchard.
Oh.
Good stuff. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like ID, A&E, and Law and Crime, and many more. With Philo, you can start watching in seconds for less money and much less hassle. Really easy to use, really easy to sign up. Try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/smalltownmurder. That's philo.tv/smalltownmurder to get 50% off your first month.
Now back to the show.
And welcome back to Small Town Murder Express.
Yay! And choo-choo!
Oh, yay indeed, Jimmy. Yay indeed. My name is James Petragallo. I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Jimmy Wissman.
Thank you, folks, so much for joining us. And all aboard the murder train. Here we go, pulling away from the station. And, of course, a crazy-ass episode. We're in Arizona today, Jimmy. So
great.
It's never normal when we're in Arizona, and it's places we know, so we give a little extra insight. We'll get into that very quickly. First of all, shutupandgivememurder.com. Get your tickets right now, September 10th at the Pabst in Milwaukee. Almost sold out now. They are going down to the wire. Yeah. Get your last tickets and get in there and see us. We're packing that thing, selling it out. Going to have the biggest show we've ever had, and we're excited for it. So get in there right now. And then as well, get your tickets for September 23rd in Tampa at the Improv. Two shows that night. Those are going to be two different shows, too. So if you want to see both, you're going to see two different shows. And then the next night in Orlando as well, two shows at the Improv. So get your tickets for those. We can't wait to see you. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com. And Patreon. It's going to be great. We can't wait. Yeah. Patreon this week. Patreon.com/crimeinsports is where you get all of your bonus stuff. And that includes every other week. You're going to get two new episodes, huge back catalog to go through. Right. You get all the crime and sports, all the small town murder this week, which you're going to get for your Patreon subscription. You are going to get for crime and sports. We're going to talk about Brett Favre and his dick pics and some other sports sex scandals, like a female golfer who allegedly forced her caddy to impregnate her. or he would lose his job. Some weird NBA things with some strippers. There's a lot of weird stuff we'll talk about. And then for Small Town Murder, we're going to talk about two of the most terrible people ever, Charles Ng and Leonard Lake, and kind of do it in their own words, because there's plenty covered about what they've done, and it's horrible what they've done. It's arguably as bad as anybody. It really is. You could make an argument they're worse than Ted Bundy. There's a lot. Yeah. We're going to talk about
the torture's too much. It's crazy.
They took real pleasure in it, which has made it extra gross. So we'll talk about that kind of in their own words, and we'll really make fun of them a lot. So get all of that and more. Patreon.com/crimeandsports. And at the end of the regular show, you get a shout out, of course, where Jimmy mispronounces your name. That said, I think it's time to sit back, Jimmy. Let's do this. Clear the lungs, shall we? And shout, shut up
and give me murder.
Let's do this, Jimmy.
All right.
What do you say? Let's go on a trip, shall we?
Yeah.
We are going not very far. A little up the road here. Well, a lot up the road. About 2 hours and 15 minutes away from Phoenix to Baghdad, Arizona.
Oh, boy.
Baghdad, Arizona. And that is not Baghdad with an H like Iraq.
No.
This is B-A-G. This is Baghdad.
Right.
That's it. B-A-G-D-A-D, Arizona. It's about 3 hours and 15 minutes to Las Vegas. So it's essentially, it's in the middle of goddamn shit
Las
nowhere.
Las Vegas, Nevada or Las Vegas, New Mexico?
Las Vegas, Nevada, certainly.
Okay.
It is in the middle of nowhere. It's a place that you pass and you go, whoa, people live there? Weird.
Also, that's a weird spelling.
Yeah. Why did they spell it wrong? Oh, they probably don't know any better. That's what you think.
I have no idea. Yeah.
And you're like, is that actually a town or was that a mine like 100 years ago and now it's abandoned? But it's actually a town, but it's not really a town. It's basically like in like West Virginia back in the day when the coal company would own everything.
Right.
That's what's going on here. There are no,
really?
There's nothing privately owned in this whole town. It's all owned by the mining company. Everyone's homes are owned by the mining company. Absolutely, to this day.
Wow.
This place is a company town through and through. I mean, I don't know if they pay in scrip or what, but it's bad. Now, the name, we got to talk about Baghdad. Yeah. Right. There's several different, you know, theories.
Local lore explanations.
One is that it's just a misspelling of Baghdad, Iraq, because they thought that symbolized some sort of riches back in the day, like Iraq and gold and some shit. So
this place is going to be thriving.
Well, originally they thought there was gold and silver here. And so that's why they dug mines. And then it turns out it's copper. But and they're still pulling it out of the ground. But several, it's not quite gold. Several people tried to make a go of it in the gold business, and it didn't work here, though.
Got it.
And then another, the local lore that everybody says is that it's not anything to do with Iraq. It's actually a father and son had a small scale copper mining operation in the late 1800s, and the father dug out the ore, and the son loaded it into bags. And when a bag was full, he'd ask the dad, "Do you have a bag, Dad?"
So it
became Baghdad. That's the local lore that everybody says. So
that's probably accurate.
That seems more accurate. It really does.
Depressing.
Honestly,
another Baghdad.
I feel like people back then wouldn't know Iraq existed that lived here.
Yeah.
So more common to that. Right now, there is 1,888 people here. So, quite a few. The income is high because you make a lot of money, but there's nowhere to spend it or do anything. You're hours away from anywhere. It's $88,676 is the median household income, which is
they are crushing life.
Yeah, it's 25 grand more than the you know rest of the country. 67% of the jobs are in quote mining, quarrying, and oil and gas extraction.
Ouch.
It's normally 0.6% of the jobs. Here it's 67%. So,
God. Is it Freeport MacMoran?
Yeah, MacMoran. Freeport MacMoran. They own the entire town. And literally, you go to the website, and the About Us isn't about the town. Oh, we have parks. We have this. It's just we're a mining company that started on this date.
Fascinating.
It's wild. So, the mine does open pit mining around the clock.
Wow.
It's been going on. Median home price here is $219,000. So, it's low. Compared to Phoenix, it's like half the price.
A bunch of money.
Yeah, that's it. The town has everything owned. Then they have a small Bash's grocery store.
Yeah, local.
And a couple other little businesses, and that's it. Because there's nothing really going on. A couple reviews here. They're all really good. Everybody loves this place for some reason.
Eat work. How can you be upset, James?
It's it. You have no time to think or be upset. Yeah. We don't let
make
the internet get in
support.
Here.
Yeah.
Makes people sad.
all the bad words, all the negativity.
People going out doing things. Seeing movies and stuff like that. Just going to make our people sad. They need to know this is the life they lead forever until they drop dead into mine. That's
pull
it.
Shit out the ground. We'll pay you. You go support Eddie Bash's family.
There you go. 4 stars. Baghdad is a nice place to live with calm surroundings because there's nothing there. It's the goddamn desert.
Nothing.
That's what's there.
Calm surroundings. It's just like the death scene of every movie where somebody's lost in the desert, where there's eagles flying and cawing and shit.
It's just the end of the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's a place to have a showdown. That's it.
It's quiet because that's your death gurgle.
Oh, shit. Quiet atmosphere and well-mannered people. There are good and bad aspects of Baghdad, like any other place. But besides being disconnected from large cities and readily available resources, it does have a great infrastructure. Besides having nothing, it's got a couple of things. Many free facilities, and it's safe, except for occasional rattlesnakes. Yeah, nature is the most dangerous thing there.
And how frequent is occasional? I need fucking calendar periods there.
I think a lot.
A week? Once a week?
A lot.
I bet you're right.
Yeah, I think you have like a rattlesnake shovel, and just in case, that you keep around your house so you can chop their heads off, and you're pretty, you know. Things to do very quickly. Nothing. Mine copper. And then the only other thing I found is rock hounding. Which is going through around the areas where the mines are and around them and collecting minerals and rocks for your own collection, not to sell. Just like, oh, look, here's
collect
some quartz.
Put it on your windowsill.
There you go. I found that out there. Really? Wow. Oof, that's pretty nice.
What were you doing? Walking.
Walking.
To work.
Or look at Frog Rock. Which is a big rock that's shaped like a frog. That's
this
what people do. It's bleak.
Bleak.
It's bleak. This is as bleak of a town as we've ever covered. We've never covered a company town. You're not even allowed to own your house there. That's how shit this town is. So that said, let us talk about a horrible murder. And this one.
Somebody got frustrated here, James. Say
crazy
it ain't
to think
so.
About, isn't it? Isn't it nuts? And guess what? It's a guy who worked in the mine. There's people that work in mines involved here, but it has nothing to do with mining. It's very much, it's not like nothing like that. All right, let's get into this now. We have to go back in time to November 12th, 1987. So it's a good murder time, the mid-80s here. This is good. We have to talk, first we'll talk about a married couple, okay?
Yeah.
We have David. David Johnson is his name. He is 42 years old. He works at the Cyprus Baghdad Copper Company at this point in time. He's a heavy equipment operator.
Oh.
And he said he's kind of a heavy set guy, a big guy.
They usually are.
Yeah, you got to be a little beefy to operate heavy equipment. You're not.
It's very rare that you see a little guy on a backhoe.
It's
or
a little skinny guy.
It's usually a very in charge man.
Or woman, but she's beefy. Yeah. Someone's beefy. Yeah. Someone's got forearms. You know what I mean?
They're dense. You betcha.
Someone has a standing bowling league night, is what we're saying, that works there. So he's married, recently married to just the middle, I think the spring of 1987, he marries Susan Marie Johnson at this point, who is 24 years old.
Oh, get after
so
it, David.
He got himself 18 years younger. Susan brings 2 children to this marriage who are 6 years old and 4 years old.
Oh, so she got after it early.
Yeah, she got married early to get out of her house, and that's what happened there. So on this night of November 12th, 1987, it's about 11 o'clock at night and David comes home. He's working second shift at the mines.
Oh, damn it.
Heavy equipment operating.
Oh, James, in the middle of the Arizona desert.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, God,
that's
working
miserable.
Second shift, the worst time of day. There's
there
no
when
relief
the sun,
in that shift. Yeah.
You get there when the sun is just at its,
it's
most
going.
Oppressive. 3 o'clock, you're like,
oh
geez,
man.
I can't even see.
It's on a rolling boil at that point.
Holy shit, just a simmer. So he comes home from work that night, 11 o'clock. Maybe he's like, oh, at least I have a 24-year-old wife inside. That's good.
There's
He's walking in there, and it's at this point where their neighbors hear 2 or 3 gunshots. They're like, what the hell is that about? So they look out the window to see what that could have been, because it is Baghdad, Arizona. So you get a gunshot, a stray. A stray is going to go off every once in a while out there.
It may be 22 caliber snake shot.
There might have been
one sitting on the porch.
Might have been like a 14-pound rattler coming at you, and somebody had to put it down. We don't know. Or coyotes. The desert's whatever. Dangerous.
It's scary shit out there.
The only things that survive out there are really rugged shit that is can last with horrible fucking conditions. Yeah. That's the only things that survive.
It's either got spikes. Sharp ass teeth
or poison
poison that it delivers through something fucking sharp
that can fire at you from a distance. It's a terrifying place to be. We're not meant to be there. Nothing is. It's like the bottom of the ocean. And it's like there's what is that thing? It's got a light hanging over. It's biting me. What's happening? So now they look out the window and they saw a man running from their house, from the David and Susan's house next door, and getting into a green car and taking off, a green sedan, and speeding off. Okay,
so two gunshots?
Two or three, they're not sure. Okay. Gunshots are weird, especially with hilly echoes areas. There's echoes. Yeah. So they think two, but it could have been three, they said. We're not sure. So, and plus, in that situation, if you're not expecting it, you may not have heard
the first one.
So they see all of this. Now, David is shot. He's the one who's hit, and he is shot in the lower back and in the chin with a .357.
Holy!
Now somehow he's not bleeding out. There's no exits. These .357 bullets are staying inside of him, and everything's kind of pooling inside of him. So he's not.
He took them.
Yeah, he's trying.
Wow.
He takes the two. He's not dead. He's trying. He gets to his front door. He's trying to get in his house, but the door's locked.
Oh my God.
He can't get in because it's 11 o'clock at night. He's coming home from work. You know, I'm sure that they have two little kids inside. I'm sure she locks the door. You know.
Yeah.
So he's trying to bang on the door, and no one's coming to the door. So he's like, you know, fuck, what do I? He's just looking for help. So he drags himself, stumbles over to the neighbor's house next door, where he kind of half collapses. He's semi-conscious. It's a .357 he's been shot with. So that's crazy. Now, the neighbors, not only the neighbor's house that he stumbled to, but other neighbors have kind of swarmed to the situation and like, holy shit, this poor guy. And he can talk barely, and they said, who did this to you? What the hell happened? And he said, all he could say was a man with a mask on his face.
No idea.
Kept saying over and over, he had a mask on. He doesn't know who it is. Now, Susan, hearing all the commotion, had come outside as well and talked to her husband as well in the group setting. Now, they're all there. They didn't all clear out so she could have a private moment with him.
Right.
They're all there, and she says that he told me that it was my ex-husband, Clifford Minter, who did it to him. So, but she's the only one who heard that. Everybody else just heard a man with a mask. And she said, no, he told me it was Clifford Minter. So, you know, the cops get there and she says, they all say the guy sped away in a green car. She said, it's Clifford Minter. That's who you're looking for. I guess he's in a green car. I don't know. But Clifford Minter, look for him. So they broadcast that out. They set up basically any car going out of Baghdad. And there's not a lot of roads out of Baghdad. This isn't a place where there's a lot of options. There's what? One road going one way, one road going the other way.
There's probably a four-way, and each four goes, or two of the four likely go towards the interstate.
That's what I mean. I mean, out of like the whole town on the interstate. Oh, God. There's the interstate and like what? Maybe a back road to Prescott, maybe like over there.
Maybe a back road to the mine.
It goes into the quarry. I don't know what's going on, but there's not a lot. So it's pretty easy to close off and kind of see who's coming in and out anyway.
Sure.
So as a police officer speeding to the location from outside of Baghdad, he passes a green vehicle that's coming out of Baghdad.
Yeah.
So he pulls it the fuck over and stops it. But the guy inside, driven by a man, it's not Clifford Minter driving the car. Mm-hmm. So they're looking for Clifford Minter. This is just a guy in a green car. So they ask the guy what the hell's going on. It's just one dude in a car. And he said that he just dropped off a friend of his in Baghdad, and he's just on his way home back to Prescott. I don't know.
Yeah. Baghdad, and I'm getting the fuck out of here.
That's it. It was in Baghdad, so I'm leaving quickly. I'd like to do something but go to Bash's and look for, you know, low-grade minerals. I'm looking for something here. So
I'm all full up on Frog Rock.
Yeah, I saw Frog Rock already, like 10 years ago. I'm done now.
Yeah.
And somebody painted it like a frog, too. You seen it?
No, right?
Yeah, there's also a skull rock that somebody painted white as well.
I hate this place.
They're trying to put some personality into it, and it's very sad. The Frog Rock is really a stretch, too. It's just a big rock, and if you paint anything like anything, it sort of looks like it. It could have been any shape you wanted it to be. So anyway, but the police are saying if it's not Clifford Minter, let the guy go. So they let the guy go. He takes off. Obviously, it's not Clifford, and that's it. So this cop heads to the crime scene. Now, at the crime scene, there's a small amount of blood where the shooting occurred. But the stranger thing is there's what they find to be, after taking it in and testing it, to be dried potato.
What?
There's shards of dry potato all over the place.
Like mash or a gratin or
like
fries?
If you took a potato and, there's sweet potato, Jimmy. That's a sweet potato fry it's a curly fry they have, just a bunch of curly fries. Someone came straight from Arby's.
Potatoes could be made in so many ways.
That's what I mean.
They got to specify.
No, it's true. Were they twice baked? What are we looking at here? No, if you like took a potato and like grated it like cheese, mm-hmm. you'd have like little bits. And if they sat out
for,
yeah, but like smaller, if they sat out for a minute, they'd be dry, almost like flakes, but they're from a fresh potato. You could tell.
Weird.
And on David's glasses, there are speckles of potato starch as well.
What the fuck?
So there's a potato involved in this somehow. All right?
Eating a raw potato and yelled and spit it on him?
Eating a potato like an apple and he just...
Yeah.
Just snack crunch a raw
sir
one.
Potatoes are not hand not, fruit.
No, they're not a hand fruit. I used to tell, I had a friend of mine who ended up playing professional football, but at the time he was trying to bulk up, he was going to college, and he walked around with this big Tupperware full of chicken breasts and baked potatoes, and he'd just pull baked potatoes out and eat them like apples. They were cooked, but he would just eat them like that. And I'm like,
bizarre.
Bro, not even any like a sour dollop of sour cream on
no
there.
Cheese, some, no butter.
No butter. Not even salt.
Baked potato.
He'd just eat it like an apple, man. I said, that's not a hand food. What are you doing?
That's a bizarre way of doing that.
You're a
man.
Weird motherfucker, man. But he made the NFL for like 5 years, so I guess
maybe he did it right.
He knew what he was doing. So they couldn't figure out what the fuck's up with this potato. Did someone beat him with a potato afterwards
right.
and like try to hit him with a potato? It didn't work, so they used the 357. Is that the plan? They don't know. So I see the look in your eyes there.
Oh my God.
We'll find out. Yeah, they concluded after some thinking about it that the murderer must have, or attempted murderer at this point, he's still alive, must have put a potato over the barrel of the gun
to silence it.
A potato silencer, which I give him credit for ingenuity. Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad idea, but it didn't work because the neighbors heard gunshots and it also left a telltale potato residue everywhere. Well,
here's the thing about a 357. That's usually a revolver, and all the sound comes out of there.
That's
it's not necessarily
exactly right.
just the barrel.
You can't
You've
put
got
it on
all
the end.
These vents.
There's everywhere, and it's loud, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he realize where the hammer hits the bullets back here?
There's a lot of room in there.
Boom. That's where the boom comes from. The barrel's just where all the energy gets pushed out through. That's the point.
What a fascinating human being this person is.
So right away, think about what we're dealing with. I'll put
a potato on the end of the gun.
On the end of the gun for a silencer.
I wish I would have seen this.
I know. I wish I could have seen it and went, do you think that's going to work? What do you think is going
to
happen?
David had to have seen it and laughed, right?
Yeah, he's coming at me with a potato. Hi. No, I don't want any potato. Ow! You know, like, what is that? Is he trying to sell me potatoes at my house? What's going on? So, David.
Russet people are vicious.
They are. Jesus, this guy must be from Idaho. So, it's the Idaho Mafia. They've come down. This is what they do. That's how you know it's them. You're covered in potato starch.
Spraying tater everywhere.
Spraying tater starch on you. Oh, no, it's their calling card. Oh, my God.
This is insane.
Oh, no, it's the Oreida mob. They never stop. They'll never stop till they get their man. That's the problem.
Ah, he got me with a spud.
He got me. Now, David he survives. The paramedics are there. They take him to the hospital. He does not have a lot of blood loss, which should have, unless it hit his brainstem or something, that would be the reason for death, would be blood loss. And
how awesome that a potato slows a bullet so much.
Apparently, apparently this guy's just a thick guy. He's an overweight guy, and he had a lot more flesh to go through, they said.
Wow.
So there was no exit, which is where the tearing comes, and that's where all the blood comes from. And it didn't hit any arteries either, so lucky.
Wow.
So problem is, some of his fluid, there was fluid from the blood from the chin wound, and other fluids that ended up getting into his lungs, and including the intravenous fluids given to him that leaked into his vascular system and pooled into his lungs, that combined with him being overweight caused him to die in the hospital.
Oh, my God.
So if everything was handled perfectly, there was a chance he would survive this. But
the complications,
they fucked it good. Yeah, the hospital fucked it up. Plus, he got shot twice with a .357. I mean, he wasn't in great shape, but the hospital possibly could have survived him. That's not what I mean to say. Could have helped him survive, but instead it didn't work. Now, that's what happens that night. So that's that evening. That all goes on. Now, the next day, Susan here, seems very tense. She sends her kid to school the next day, she's got a kindergartner here. Her daughter. I won't say her name. She's in kindergarten. I mean, she's like our age, but still.
Right.
Anyway, they said her daughter told the teacher, "Quote, mommy's kind of anxious right now." And the teacher said, "And sad." And the teacher said, and the kid said, "No, just anxious."
The kid knows anxious?
I guess knows anxious from sad. They gave him all those faces and they figured him out. So that night, Susan went out drinking with a friend of hers. Everybody said she seemed to be in a good mood. She took off her wedding rings before she went out and said, "I'm not going to get anywhere with these."
Susan.
She ended up fucking the bouncer that night from the bar.
What?
Whom she just met at the bar that night, had sex with him. And then the following day, she told this bouncer that her husband was murdered over a narcotics transaction. And she told him that the police had arrested an old boyfriend of hers already, but he's innocent, and that a federal narcotics agent is working with her to clear him. So that's what she's got going on.
Girl, this happened yesterday.
Very complicated.
Doing?
It's all very fast moving. Now, several people that Susan knows describe her as both manipulative and a liar. One of those two, either or. The main two words used for her. We know a few people like that. Shit. And a high school classmate described her as very manipulative, the kind of person who would get out and get what she wanted no matter what. Uh-huh. So now right away, they look into Clifford Minter. He's the guy, ex-husband. Yeah. It all makes sense. She just got married, everything like that. But he was not anywhere near Baghdad that night, and definitely has a solid alibi, and he's basically like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" Exactly like an innocent person should be. Mm-hmm. And they go, "Well, that's not right. We don't think he did it." So they look into her a little more, and they realize 3 days before the shooting, Susan forged a document to make her, instead of David Johnson's children from a previous marriage, the beneficiary of a life insurance policy with the copper company that's worth $52,000.
What the hell, Sue?
So that doesn't look good. And then altogether, these policies would have provided her with about $96,000 between that and another policy after death.
In 87 money.
That's you could start over with that. Yeah. Very, very comfortably.
Very easily.
Yeah. So it's at this point that they're like, we got to look a little deeper into Susan here. She's banging bouncers. She's out partying. She's forging life insurance policies 3 days before her husband's fucking whacked.
Exactly.
This doesn't sound good. So they find a guy who they find out she has been having an affair with for about a year, since before David and her got married. I mean, all through she was having an affair while she was planning a wedding and getting married. And why get married? You're like, you obviously don't want to do that. So, well, you want the money. We know that now. Either way, the guy's name is Michael Ray White. He is one of the most interesting people we're ever going to meet here. He's 38 years old at the time.
Yeah.
He has three ex-wives and six kids.
Wow.
Yeah, that's...
That's a life lived, babe.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, let's talk about White here. His father was known as very aggressive and hostile. Just to give you some genetics, his father left when he was 18 months old, and then his mother immediately married a severe alcoholic who was terrible, and then he left. It's a real mess. But his father was expelled from junior high school for hitting a teacher with a chair.
Holy kid.
That's old school right there.
Yeah.
We're talking this happened in 1940 or something. This isn't like, the kids have gone crazy now. He's listening to too much rap music. This is 1940. Yeah. He was like, sing, 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 ba-ba-da-ba-ba, and he's hitting a teacher with a chair. This is...
Yeah. Chuck Berry isn't even out. This
fuck
is crazy.
No. Frank Sinatra's barely out. This is Jolton Joe DiMaggio. That's what's on the radio. And he's hitting people with a chair.
That's amazing. Teachers.
A teacher.
People in positions of authority.
No shit. He would get in bar fights all the time. Mm-hmm. Apparently, one time he became angry when Michael White's mother didn't immediately clear the dishes from the dinner table after he finished eating. So he kicked the dinner table across the room and ordered her to fix the whole thing and pick it up and, put everything back together. Yeah.
Kicked mom's table to the ground.
Yeah. Kicked the whole thing. Just kicked the table over. Well, we don't need this piece of shit if you don't want to clear it off. Wow. One of his stepfathers, and I say one of because there was many, Eugene Perlow, frequently beat the shit out of Michael White, obviously, with his belt and all that sort of thing and hands. That's kind of typical for 50s, 60s rearing.
That's par for the course, yeah.
Once, though, White here, the Michael White, reached across the table and this guy backhanded him, knocking him off the chair and to the ground, causing the mother to get upset and Michael to run away from home. So this happened a lot, shit like this. Apparently, the stepfather was very abusive. They would play a game called Who Could Hit the Easiest.
That ain't a game.
No. And obviously, White lost every round of it.
Yeah.
Who could hit the easiest? You go first, and he taps you, and then you fucking sock him and go, you win. That's what the stepfather would play with a child.
Big win.
Big win.
What do we have for him, Johnny?
Fuck yeah. Look Wake at me. Up. My prize is go get me a beer. That's what it was. So he said that he would get hit in the shoulder and nose. He has scars from being hit. Once a stepbrother locked him in the trunk of a car and left him there through an entire drive-in movie when he was a child. Nice. That wasn't nice.
Well, that's because he was trying to get laid in the front seat.
He just left him in there, thought it was funny. Apparently, the stepfather was stricter with Michael White than all the other kids. That's according to the stepfather's kids said that.
That happens for sure.
Absolutely. And around that time, his behavioral problems started. Big shocker. Mm-hmm. His uncle unsuccessfully tried to kill a truant officer when he was younger.
What?
A truant officer, someone trying to get him to go back to school.
Right.
How did he try to kill him, you ask? Well, let me explain. With six sticks of dynamite.
He tried to explode the man?
Tried to explode him. Tried to blow him up. What kind of old-timey minor shit is that? Did he say consarn at first? Consarn goddamn truant officers with the Tennessee Valley Authority, and he's trying to blow him up.
Did he have him wired to the road, or do you just him at him?
I think he tried to put him in his car. I think he tried to blow his car up. And then he later went to prison for robbery. White's first cousin is serving, at this time that this is all going on, a life sentence for first degree murder. So he comes from a real, some real
stock. Yeah.
This show, Small Town Murder, is sponsored by BetterHelp.
BetterHelp.com.
Absolutely. And maybe your social battery. Where are you monitoring that right now? You drained down? Too much socializing from holidays? Not enough? Maybe some people hole up in the winter?
Sure.
And therapy is the thing. Therapy can help give you some self-awareness so you can build a social life that's not going to drain you or leave you wanting more here. So we totally are 100% advocates of therapy here. It's great for you. There's a million things it can help you with, and this is one of them, because sure. social stuff is something that we all, it's really hard not to struggle with nowadays, especially even social media mixed in the mix. It's difficult. It really is.
Overwhelming.
Therapy can help, and if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
Yeah.
We very much recommend it. Entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. It's suited to your schedule. Mm-hmm. You fill out this brief questionnaire. They very quickly match you with a licensed therapist, and no additional charge. You can switch therapists at any time, which is a big deal, because that's sometimes you're not vibing with somebody and you need to vibe with somebody. No additional charge for that at all. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/smalltownmurder today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/smalltownmurder.
And now back to the show.
Hey, everybody, just going to take a quick break from the show to tell you a little bit about the safest sponsor that's ever been, Simply Safe.
Oh, SimplySafe.com. SimpliSafe.com.
Springtime's coming here. So you got the spring, you got fresh air, fresh starts, and you clean your house. That's all fresh. It's also the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security. Make sure your newly cleaned, nice house is secure. That's important.
Well protected, yeah.
It's the only security system that Jimmy and I will use, and we recommend it highly. We both have it on not only our studios, our houses, anything we have that needs protection. Simply Safe is the way to go. It's so easy to install that even we can do it. You guys will love it because you'll feel secure. You will not be small town murdered in your own home is what it is if you have Simply Safe, because they're going to protect you. They're trusted by experts. It was named the best home security systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report. And Newsweek awarded Simply Safe the best customer service in home security. Simply Safe has given us and our many listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. We want you to feel good. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/small. That's SimpliSafe, SimpliSafe.com/small. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Now back to the show.
Not done.
Concentrating.
Not done yet.
Okay.
His maternal grandfather was a violent, abusive alcoholic who died of cirrhosis of the liver. You could say that about me, too, so that's fine. That doesn't mean I'm going to kill somebody. It's exactly the same thing. His uncle died of alcohol-related issues. First cousin also was a drug addict into meth and heroin back in the 70s.
Sure.
His cousin was also arrested for selling rock cocaine in the early 80s, so he's ahead of the curve there. And all sorts of shit. White himself was jailed on a lot of misdemeanors and things like that. His mother was addicted to prescription pills while he was a baby and a toddler, and also smoked and took drugs while he was in her womb.
That's amazing.
And his stepfather would also beat him and his mother. White himself, Michael, suffered a broken collarbone at age 2, allegedly from falling off a picnic table. His arm needed to be kept in a sling, but his mother didn't make him do that, and so his arm was a little weird. At age 4, he suffered a severe head injury from striking his head while running around a pool, and his mother didn't take him to the doctor. It was such a bad head injury that he still, to this day, had a dent in his forehead from it.
You don't take your kid. There's a
it's
vision.
Dented.
What?
Dented forehead. She went, well, I mean, it was too flat anyway. Now he's looking.
How
got
many
some
fingers
character.
Am I holding up? You're all right.
Now he's got, so what's a finger? Yeah, he'll be fine. He can talk. That's crazy. Around the same age, he had a fracture of his hip when he slipped on wet wood. He's got low intelligence as another problem. Jesus Christ, he would have to, around the age of 5, he was made responsible for taking care of his toddler brother.
As you do.
At 5. And while his mother would go to work, so he'd be responsible for the kid. And
at 5, he's babysitting.
When he was 7, his mother told him, you're the man of the family now. Swear to God, I'm not kidding.
All grows up.
You're all grown up, my little guy. And that's from his mother. That's not from him. So, she neglected his education. She didn't make him go to school all the time, the mother. They moved frequently. He attended 3 schools just in the second grade. He had to he attended 10 different schools from kindergarten to junior high.
He'll be fine.
He'll be all right. He's unable to identify which school he attended at a later date. He doesn't even remember anymore.
Yeah.
Part of that is because he started doing drugs around 14.
Right.
By 19, he was smoking weed every day while also doing heroin, cocaine, LSD, meth, whatever he could get his hands on.
It's amazing. You know, small towns are oftentimes regressed in terms of like style and culture.
Yeah.
The one thing that they are always advanced in is drug use and chemicals.
Absolutely.
Boy, are they've been huffing gas since the 30s.
Someone will go somewhere else and figure out how to get high and bring it in. And then they just bring it's like an ant bringing more food to the nest. It's like a poison.
It's incredible.
So he did all this. By 25, he moved to San Francisco, where he became a heroin addict and got hepatitis C.
Wow.
He thinks that his use of LSD, cocaine, and everything else contributed to the demise of his first marriage, because he wouldn't stop doing it. His second wife, though, didn't really like what he did, but realized that he needed the drugs to live with himself, so she was okay with it. She did say when he was sober for a couple months, he, quote, seemed like he could be a decent person, but then he became irritable and abusive after that when he'd start doing drugs again.
Withdrawals and such.
Yeah. He would talk all about his life, about finding his natural father. He asked his mother for help, but she wouldn't. As a teenager, he ran away to California to search for his father, which he never found. Yeah. And that was that. So... that's it. And couldn't find the father.
What a story.
He is, at this point, as an adult, suffering from multiple different sort of low-grade mental illnesses, as well as Graves' disease, which is a physical problem for him.
What is that?
Graves' disease is an overactive thyroid that causes a lot of problems. And I'm not no shit about medicine, but this is looking it up. They all say the same thing. Causes insomnia, disorganized thinking, paranoia, erratic behavior, mood swings, nervousness, anxiety, increased heart rate, blood pressure, jitteriness. It's a general
discomfort overall of the entire body.
It's a neuro whatever the fuck. Yeah. So he is also low intelligence, as we'll talk about. Weird thing is, Graves' disease is the most common in women under the age of 40. And he's a 38-year-old man with it, which, I mean, it's not uncommon, but it's just the most common there. He recalls always feeling anxious and nervous. He's got stomach ulcers as a child, which with that childhood, it makes sense.
Yeah. And for that, you wouldn't know that it's a disease. You'd just assume probably shitty diet or whatever.
Yeah,
the fuck
who knows?
In their body.
They're just feeding him nothing but fucking Mountain Dew at home, and that's all. Drink your dinner.
That'll probably dissolve your stomach lining.
Drink your dinner, Dew. Come on now. So, that's not good for you. Always chewing his fingernails, hyperactive, unable to sit or focus in school, wide emotional swings all the time, explosive fits. Sometimes he's always screaming. He dropped out of school very early, we'll talk about here, or early in terms of grade, but not in terms of age. His IQ, his IQ went down over the years.
Is that right?
He was an 86 IQ at 13.
Oh, shit.
Which isn't real sharp to begin with.
That's not advanced, no.
91 by 14, but then by 16 it had dropped to 74, which is a Gumpian level.
What happened?
That is, could have damaged his head, drugs. I mean, who knows what's going on? Emotional factors factor into that, too.
Sure.
If you're depressed enough or fucked up in the head enough, if mental illness creeps in enough.
Yeah. I do understand that you stop learning at some point or like retaining information, but like for information
16,
to like
it shouldn't be.
Escape you that early, that's insane.
It's not the information, it's the ability to process and
the motor skills. It's all just you're forgetting.
He would work double shifts or two jobs just to control his energy because he had so much energy. His three wives recall him as being hyperactive, nervous, and unable to sit still. He couldn't sleep. He would get up because he couldn't shut his mind down and things like that. His second wife, Eloise, thought he was insane because of his irrational and thought patterns and paranoia. He would place his family at risk, but irrationally, and think they weren't at risk. He'd do stupid things and not realize the risks. When she was pregnant with their third child, they lived, quote, on desert ground.
What is that?
In the middle of the fucking desert.
Just out there.
After Jeremiah was born, that's their child there, they kept him by the river in a bassinet covered with a mosquito net. And the wife here insisted that they move him after his face turned beet red and poured sweat. You know, because it's hot as fuck in the desert.
Yeah, that's heat stroke.
And that he would sometimes not get medication that doctors would prescribe for him and wouldn't give medication to the infant son when he was ill sometimes also because he thought there was something wrong with it.
Oh,
so they moved to Maine at some point.
What?
Yeah, from the desert. I want it to be chilly and wet now and cloudy. That's what I'm looking for. Totally different.
That's a long way to go.
That's his brain. It goes from Arizona to Maine quite frequently, his brain. It's very representative of his mental state here.
Yeah.
She said one day, he quote, came home one day and thought their car was being watched. They immediately left town on a bus and never went back to the apartment for their possessions.
That's unstable
crazy.
As fuck, man.
His other wife recalled him exhibiting bizarre and paranoid behavior during the 2 years leading up to this murder that happened. He became angry when she tried to register to vote. He told her that their lives would be ruined if the government found them. And he always insisted on using back roads and staying off highways.
Boy, he sounds fun.
He's a party. Oh, it gets better. It gets crazier. He would talk to himself all the time, and she would say, "What now?" And he'd go, "Well, never mind, nothing."
I wasn't talking to you.
He would make...
Mind your business.
Don't worry about it. Are you the only one in the car? No. She said he would make, quote, peculiar religious comments, which are always fun, peculiar religious comments, such as telling her that Lucifer lived down the street from him. And that it's cool, though, because St. Peter was coming to take care of Lucifer and, you know, clean up the street. Neighborhood watch style.
Yeah, he's on another block. He'll take care of
this. He's got that. He's working on another neighbor. He's like a guardian angel. He's got to work on something else.
Lucifer lives down the street.
One time, he traded in a trailer that they had for two mules, a harness, and a wagon. He converted the wagon to something. I don't know what. Just says converted it. Then he took Eloise, his wife, and their two kids back to Wickenburg, Arizona, to two gold claims. So that
in
was
the
his,
wagon with the
yeah,
mules.
He just pretended it was 1875. That was his goal there.
We're going on the trail.
So
the dusty trail.
They had mules. They had horses, chickens, goats, and dogs, but they had no running water where they lived. So
wow. He
didn't plan on that. So they had to haul water and everything like that. While he would look for work, she would stay in the truck with the kids in the middle of the desert. And eventually she got a job working as an aide in a hospital. During this time, they lived on charity of people. Basically, mm-hmm. They'd go beg. They were extremely poor. They lived by the riverbank in a tent, sleeping on the ground in the dirt. And the family was always filthy because it's Arizona and all the rivers are dry. So it's not like it's a river where you can wash in it and do anything. Right. It's just a dirty
riverbed.
If it rains, there'll be a stream in there for 15
minutes.
There'll
be a trickle, yeah.
That's it. So when this woman went into Eloise, when she went into labor with their third child, the pastor's wife and other people from the church cleaned her up and took her to the hospital because they felt bad for her.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Now, when he lived with his third wife in Texas, they lived for months without a bed while she was pregnant. They slept on the floor of a room and stayed in the cheapest, most rundown hotels in town, she said.
Oh, my God.
With a wife. In mid-1987, the pastor, it happened in November 1987, mm-hmm. the murder, the pastor of the church in Prescott gave him rides to and from church and fed him, said that White seemed like a loner and was just down on his luck. He would sit by himself at church dressed like a scumbag, he would say, basically. He once worked in the pastor's yard for some money. And in the month leading up to the murder, White was, quote, sleeping on the floor of an upholstery shop. That's where he was living. As a teenager, he fathered two children with two different women. So that was nice. Well, he married one of them anyway. Then he married another woman. He married Eloise when he was 25 and she was 18. All these women, by the way, were escaping abusive homes. All of them.
Yeah.
All these young ladies here. She had just left her childhood abusive home. And then he met his third wife when he was 33 and she was 19 and running away from an abusive situation as well. Fisher, his third wife, had never left the town of Wickenburg, Arizona. Imagine that.
Really?
Phoenix is right there. Never been there. Phoenix? Oh, man.
I heard tell. Oh. Wickenburg.
It's right there. It's just
there. In the 70s and 80s,
dead.
That place
much bigger. It's an island. You're right.
Yeah. That place is destitute also. It's so brown.
We did a story there. Remember?
Yeah.
It's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
Now, she'd never left the town of Wickenburg. She was very naive. She believed White when he told her that he was an undercover CIA agent.
Uh-huh.
So undercover
he lives in a Coleman.
That's it. Yeah, look at me. I'm undercover. I'm really rich. And
you'll never find me out here.
A psychiatrist would later say that he starts relationships with, quote, young women with emotional and psychological problems. These deficiencies allowed Michael to emotionally dominate them. Mm-hmm. Because the psychiatrist said his low intelligence, he knew that that was the only people he could get over on, basically. One time he bought a horse but left it tied to a water pipe for several days without food or water when he left town. The horse pulled the water pipe, burst it, and flooded the yard.
He's thirsty.
Yeah, this guy's a moron. When he went to get married to his second wife, he didn't know his mother's correct maiden name for their marriage certificate. Couldn't remember. Slipped his mind. When they moved to Oregon, him and his second wife, so it's Wickenburg, Maine, Oregon, are three places they've been.
Stunning.
They camped out in a lean-to, hoping to get squatters' rights to property, not realizing that that state's homesteading law had been repealed years earlier.
You can't even do it.
He told many people throughout his life that he was either a police informant, a CIA agent, or a federal narcotics agent. During his adult life, he held low-skilled jobs, each of which was, quote, and this is according to the psychiatrist, essentially a repetitive manual occupation appropriate for someone of low intelligence.
Uh-huh.
Holy balls. He was a dishwasher. He would, like, paint outside house painter. He sold rabbit fur and Native American jewelry on the side of the road.
Oh, boy.
And he was an assistant nurse's aide. Not a nurse's aide, an assistant nurse. Take this shit and dump it is what that is.
Yeah.
You don't need
this. Take this that I just took off of that person. I just wiped this off of them and take it outside and dispose of it.
That's that. And then rinse this out. So obviously when 24-year-old Susan, who, by the way, the attractiveness is very there's a huge disparity here. Susan's way too attractive for him as well. Mm-hmm. When they meet in January of 1987, how could she resist him? Obviously, how could she resist his wiles? So they worked together at a nursing home in Prescott. And then when they first met, they worked together at the same place. He told her, yeah, I'm a doctor. He's a nurse's aide's assistant. He's not even close to a doctor.
He's her assistant, and he's saying, I'm a doctor.
I'm a doctor. Oh, let me, here, I'll clean that shit for you, doctor.
give me those rags.
Give me the, no. I like to stay humble. You know how it goes. Stick to my roots. So at the time, he was living with his third wife already and for years, and she was already in a relationship with David, and they were planning on getting married. But while he was at work, White would come over. While David was at work, White would come over and bang Susan every day.
Unreal.
So in April, White and Susan went to Michigan where they lived together and worked at a nursing home.
How's he doing this? She doing this?
Yeah.
What is happening?
I don't know, right? David said that he felt like maybe Susan was taking advantage of him, but, you know, who knows? But in October, Susan returned to Baghdad and White went to Prescott with his wife, but they continued fucking, even though she was marrying David at this point. They spoke on the phone up to six times a day, and White would come over and bang her all the time. He would tell people all the time about his girlfriend, saying that they were planning on getting married at some time. Servers at the local restaurant, he'd be like, yeah, just here to see my girlfriend. Gonna get married. She's living with someone else in Baghdad. Her other boyfriend has money, but, you know, they're gonna get that money and use it to start a business. They're gonna move to Phoenix, where they're gonna start a business.
Oh,
yeah. So around November 1st, I guess, is when Susan started asking him, hey, will you help me kill my husband? Let's kill my husband and we'll spend his money and move to Phoenix.
Yeah. What a life.
And he said that he wanted to, but he was afraid, and then he was confused. He didn't know what to do. He told his now ex-third wife about this. Mm-hmm. She wants me to kill her husband, but I don't know what to do, and I think she's planning on killing him, and she wants me to do it, but I'm telling her, trying to talk her out of it and all that. During this
hopes and aspirations of air conditioning one day.
Oh, someday, baby. We're going to get a big old swamp cooler in the sky. It's going to be amazing. Susan, during this time, also called several insurers about life insurance policies and called Colonial Penn Insurance to inquire about a time frame on insurance policies and including when you can receive monies.
How fast till I get money?
Yep. She also called Mutual of Omaha to inquire about a $100,000 life insurance policy, but expressed concern about how long it would take for them to pay out if he were accidentally killed. If, God forbid, my husband's killed.
I don't know if you're the right one that I want. I need to know how quick
Christ.
The money comes.
So, yeah, that's, and then she was doing all this other shit. Now, on November 19th at a pawn shop, they found out, White made a down payment on the .357 Magnum revolver used to kill David. He made a second payment the next day and then returned on the 27th to return to get the remaining balance and pick up the gun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because he fucking pawned the gun after he... Think about that.
Disgusting.
Shot a guy, then pawned the gun. How dumb that is. So,
what do you guys give me for this tater?
Jesus Christ. Around November 20th, his ex-wife said she was upset with him for not making child support payments, and he said, don't worry about it. We're not going to have to worry about money anytime soon because Susan's getting $100,000. We're starting a business there. A few days later, he told his ex that he couldn't get the money, and then, that all happened here. So December 18th, 1987, finally, he's arrested in Phoenix, White. They figure the whole thing out. In his car, he has a box of .38 caliber bullets, a holster, a ski mask, an envelope with blood on it that belongs to David, another envelope on the back of it written, quote, Susie, I love you. We will be careful. I will call soon. Love, Michael. And to top it off, a bag of potatoes. Just for good measure.
No need to let these go to fucking small.
We could make some fries later, I think. Who doesn't like potatoes? So
he kept the bag.
He had just kept everything in his car. That long. Just kept it all. Hey, here's my murder kit for next time. That is fucking insane. Now, while in custody, he's examined by a doctor, and White claims to have had 4 years of law school at this point. He dropped out in the 10th grade, by the way. Okay. So, I'm sorry, the 9th grade. He had one semester of 9th grade. But he says he went to 4 years of law school, is planning to go to medical school, and all of that. And by the way, he also graduated from the Florida Air Academy. So there's that.
So he's also a pilot.
Yeah, he's a pilot and a doctor and a lawyer. I'm also the president. Did I mention that?
Secretary of State.
He said the idea for a silencer came from a Hawaii 5-0 episode. Which maybe on a .22 automatic it might work. You know what I mean? Yeah. Slightly. Not a lot.
I don't know what it would work on.
Definitely not a .357 revolver. Definitely not that.
Even a semi-automatic, the top comes back to chamber another round. So if you put a potato on there, it's going to stick it.
It's what I'm saying. None of it's never a good idea.
This is bad.
It's just a bad 70s TV trope. That's it.
It's so funny on a revolver.
Good God. So they arrest Susan.
Yeah.
They in the booking area, they run into each other in jail and during the booking area. And he asked her, quote, is everything still the same, Susie?
Do you still love me?
Okay. Now, pretrial, his fucking lawyer's like, this dude is batshit. I don't know if you know this. Fucking crazy. We should get like an exam, and they're like, he's fine. Prosecutors want death penalty for him. They're severing the cases of Susan and Michael. They're going to be tried separately. So they say that he's got a mental dysfunction. His mental dysfunction that the lawyers are trying to say is that he won't stop communicating with inmates, prosecution witnesses, and others, including Susan's counsel and the prosecutor. He's sending all these people letters. He's observed in jail, suffering from visual and auditory hallucinations and paranoia. He was, quote, sure he saw a bullet and heard someone putting together a gun in his cell. He's alone in his cell, by the way.
Yeah.
In October of 88, he attempted to demonstrate thought broadcasting to a doctor. Watch, what? I'm gonna broadcast my thoughts to you. Check it out. I can do this.
You're about to hear my every thought.
He displayed bizarre facial expressions and appeared to be responding to internal stimuli. In November 88, an inmate report said that White seemed, quote, around the bend and talked to himself all day.
Around the bend?
They said that he seemed to be suffering from a biological mental disorder and was diagnosed with organic anxiety disorder. Then he was taking some kind of drugs used to treat seizures. Then an Arizona Department of Corrections psychiatrist suggested that his, quote, occasional bizarre behavior may well be attributed to his thyroid condition, but they got that under control. Still fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, Susan testifies that she was originally going to blame the crime on her own brother, but then decided to blame it on her ex-husband. So, you know, the prosecutor said that she was clearly the instigator and kept pushing, but then he did it. Verdict comes in for him. Guilty.
Yeah.
Guilty. Now, they're saying he did it for monetary gain, so that's why they want the death penalty. And this is a judge decision, not a jury decision on
What's
this one.
What's the judge going to do?
He says, you, sir, may fuck off. Death penalty for Michael.
I am shocked.
Shocked. Now, Susan's trial, she could also get death.
Yeah.
Testimony came from two former friends who said that basically they heard her talking about wanting her husband dead and all that sort of thing. She's obviously found guilty. There's no way out of it.
Yeah.
Went to the insurance company 3 days before the death. You're going to jail.
And the only... The only reason these two men know each other is because of you.
That's the only way they're connected. They say, you, ma'am, may fuck off. 2 25-year-to-life sentences consecutive. So 50 years before she gets out, but no death penalty.
That's so light.
The judge said that the jury in the case wrote a letter to him recommending leniency to her.
She manipulated the jury.
Yeah, she's a manipulator.
That's amazing.
So in jail, he gets crazier. Let's talk about it quickly. We don't have a lot of time, but this is fucking wild. He said that the Arizona Department of Corrections was, quote, monitoring his thoughts through some sort of electrical device, which was somehow tied into the electroshock therapy machine inside the prison.
All right.
He also said that Susan, who was in Perryville, not even in the same prison, visited him outside his cell to taunt him on a regular basis as well. And he knows which portion of his head the electrical apparatus is connected to, and sent the counsel a diagram showing him this is where it's going. This part of my brain, stupid. Why can't you see this? Obviously,
If only I could get in there and get it out.
His counselor keeps doing these appeals, saying that my client is, quote, very mentally unbalanced. Like, he is crazier than you can imagine.
Yeah.
He said he's gradually withdrawn from reality since he arrived at the prison and is engaging in very, all capitals, bizarre behavior. He writes letters to his counsel that were bizarre and of no help in the preparation of his case. In one instance, he wrote 3 letters in one day and stated that he was intentionally closing, quote, to start a new letter.
What the fuck?
He's just nuts. He also wrote lots of other letters to lots of other people. He alleged that he was being tortured with various types of implants, such as a laser mic, S, and telemeters, exposing him to radiation, causing him physical and mental damage. He claimed that the Arizona Department of Corrections has raped his memories. That's a quote.
Okay.
And deprived him of all his privacy because of the mind-to-mind contact.
I'm
I can't believe they gave him life or gave him death and gave her that. That's crazy.
They sent him, the Arizona Department of Corrections employees sent him thought signals from the quote implant projection room, projected multiple personalities into his mind and forced him to perform sexual and violent acts intermittently for as long as 6 hours at a time.
6 hours of sex? Jeez.
Sex and violence. It goes back and forth. He's gets crazier here. Somehow his physicality is all fucked up. They said that he has he calculated that his bones are aging faster, and he calculated that 54 years of torture plus 32 years of bone loss combined with the normal sentence reduction rate of 18 years amounted to 104 years of sentencing relief for which he was eligible for. So really, you should let me out 70 years before I'm born. Cool? Thank you. Goodbye. That's what he wrote.
He sees Benjamin Button.
Yeah, they said he has outlandish. Then the Arizona Department of Corrections experts started diagnosing him as schizophrenic at this point. Schizophrenic and saying he has outlandish and paranoid ideas that are persisting. He wrote letters to others. He wrote to the Arizona Department of Corrections Director Samuel Lewis. He wrote to the Attorney General Grant Woods. He wrote to the U.S. Attorney at the time, Janet Napolitano. Oh, he wrote to Senator John McCain and the President Bill Clinton at the time, requesting that they stop the torture that's happening to him, please.
I'm going up the ladder. I'll go over your head.
Let me speak to your manager. Okay, well, let me speak to your manager. In 1992, he described witnessing the recent execution of another inmate through the inmate's eyes, because he said
because of the mind projection.
Yeah, that's what they did to him. He claimed that the Arizona Department of Corrections forced him to watch via an implanted laser mic, and he filed lawsuits about it.
Yeah, how dare you.
He gets a new attorney that goes, holy shit, please, bro, this fucking guy is nuts. So in 2006, he's in prison, and he is writing, on a website here, what is this? It's Death Row -us.com. So he writes a thing. I'd like to have anybody contact my website so you can see me and know my position on this issue. He says that he needs to stop people from being tortured. He's being tortured. He said, I expand in the website to include the actual torture of American prisoners on death row. Part of that is having to watch their executions through their eyes.
All right.
He gets some new appeals, okay? The prosecutor testifies for him. The prosecutor says, I didn't even want the death penalty.
Right. We can't kill this guy. This is crazy.
They only filed it because it was the process of that district attorney's department in Yavapai County to any death eligible cases you ask for.
You have to, right.
He said, I didn't even want it. He said, I thought Susan was the mastermind. Mm-hmm. This guy's a fucking moron. He's crazy as shit. He's drooling all over himself. Life would have been fine.
She certainly manipulated him into this, obviously. Yeah. It's clear.
And he wasn't going to get any fucking money. She's been grooming this guy for a year to get him to do this. She was just fucking him for nothing. So he says also that he's a model inmate. He said that he's been tried to be a model inmate. He does not participate in gangs there. He talked about his daughter who had drug problems and got raped and somebody committed suicide and then threw her into a drug situation. She tried to take her own life and all, like, she goes through this whole thing. We don't know if this is true or not, but he said he believed he saved her life and he wanted to be in contact with his children, and he's just a fucking disaster. And finally the court says, you know what, well, life is fine. We're not gonna kill this fucking guy. He's gonna get in and be like, hey, this is great, where are we going, like, this is a big car, like, we can't execute this man. He's out of his fucking mind.
I can't wait for the loop-de-loop and the corkscrew in this roller coaster.
This is going to be fun. Yay. So, what was it? David Cross had the bit about when they execute handicapped people and he goes, seatbelt for my arms. Like, we can't do that. That's crazy.
Can't do that.
That's fucking crazy. Susan, though, still isn't eligible for any kind of parole pretty soon coming up here in 10,
boy.
Because it would be from 87, 50 years.
So 37?
He's, yeah, another mid 2030 something, early 2030. So not too bad for her. At 2037, I guess.
If she lives.
If she lives. And then he, he's not going to get out, but holy shit, is he bonkers. Anyway, that's Baghdad, Arizona, and the potato gun mind control incident. If you like that show, tell the world, give a review on whatever app you're listening on. 5 stars is fantastic. Go to shutupandgivememurder.com right now. Get your tickets for all the live shows coming up, your merchandise, September 10th. 10th at the Pabst in Milwaukee. Almost sold out. Get your tickets. We're selling out the biggest show ever. September 23rd, 2 shows at the Tampa Improv. Different shows, I mind you, so get your tickets there. Next night, September 24th at the Orlando Improv. Get those tickets. You get those. Patreon.com/crimeandsports is where you get your bonus episode. This week, Brett Favre's dick pics, horny female golfer, all sorts of weird sex scandals, and on Small Town Murders, Charles Ng and Leonard Lake in their own weird, disgusting, creepy words.
Yeah.
All that said, thank you for joining us. That's patreon.com/crimeandsports. Thank you so much. Listen to Crime and Sports Tuesdays. What?
Pull the shit in the station.
Pull it into the station. Everybody's getting their bags. I got to make last announcements. Find it there. Do your thing. Patreon.com/crimeandsports. Come and see us. Holy shit. Tuesdays, Crime and Sports. Wednesdays or Thursdays, whenever the fuck it comes out. Small Town Murder. God damn it. Thank you. Until next week. It's been our pleasure.
Let's get hash browns. Bye.
Hey Prime members, you can listen to Small Town Murder early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.